Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and frequently ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very Well Armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio, and encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. Feel free to interact with the show by calling 563-999-3787. That's 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning. No sacred cows here. And here we are in October now. I mean, it's October already, and I made this comment back in, I think, a show or two ago, but man, does September ever fly by? And the thing about September is, like, summer seems to kind of I won't say summer goes by slow, because summer seems to go by fast. I'll tell you what doesn't go by slow is January, February. January, February, and the early part of March, maybe March itself, that doesn't go slow in Wisconsin. But it seems like, summer, we can have a good summer. You have to get some warm weather. It feels like summer. You know, you get enough warm weather, enough mosquitoes, and, you're kind of ready for fall. I don't think anybody's ever really ready for winter. I mean, I don't know, maybe some like skiers and snowmobilers, they're ready for winter, but yeah, but then, so summer, you know, goes, and then, you get to September. And then, like I mentioned, sometimes Labor Day is already a weekend. So that first week of September, you kind of block that, you lump that in with summer, even though it's September, because Labor Day is like the unofficial end of summer. And then, so you're already a week into September before you start acknowledging that we're not in, what's the word I'm looking for, philosophical summer, because it's not meteorological summer, whatever. You're not in calendar summer. No, I guess I can't say that either because calendar summer goes till September 21st. Anyway, you're not in standard summer feeling, summer state of mind. Because, you know, school starts. I mean, kids go back to school. If you don't have kids anymore, then, you know, you don't have that little landmark in your calendar in the year. But it's summer is like the summer vacation season. Let's put it that way. The summer vacation season, that's like Memorial Day to Labor Day. So Labor Day being like sometimes a week into September, then you're still lumping that first weekend with summer. And then not really accepting September as a transitional fall month, just treating it like, so then you're a weekend, then all of a sudden, a week goes by, you're at mid September and you feel like you just got into September. And then, you know, a couple weeks more and September's over and here you are in October and you're like, damn, that was a quick, I thought it was summer like a week ago and now it's fall. So, that's how September seems to go. So October already, fall's my, I say this every week, because fall, every show, fall's just my favorite time of year, absolute favorite time of year. A little bit less humidity, still good weather, cooler nights, you know, comfortable days. Windows open. It's just maybe you get a few less mosquitoes. Maybe you get a frost coming along here and not too far in the near future and kill off some of those mosquitoes. It's just the smells better. I don't know. I just fall is my absolute favorite time of year. But yeah, so we're October already. It's my favorite time to boat because we don't have to mess with, where we go to swim. Is the water warm? Is the water cold? Is it, you know, we just kind of cruise around the harbor, cruise around the river, maybe stroll out into the lake or something if it's a nice day. But then dock the boat, sometimes at Lakeshore State Park, drink some drinks. Speaking of which, I got to see a Wisconsin Carry member, Ed Kirch. Ed, great to see you. I had my boat yacht docked at Lakeshore State Park, and I'm actually going to the back of my boat to I shouldn't even admit this on the radio, but I'm going to the back of my boat to trim my toenails. And I hear, says I'm just sitting back in the very far back of my boat. My daughter, my fiance, Kim, she was busy. My other daughter, Julia, had homecoming. And so they were doing pictures all day, which would be, to me, about the most boring day, Saturday afternoon ever, would be to sit there and take pictures of a bunch of little teeny boppers going to homecoming. So my fiance did that. She likes that kind of crap. I went on the boat. My other daughter, Kayla, came with her boyfriend. So we're out there cruising on the harbor, taking a nice leisurely stroll around the marina, look at some boats, stroll into Lakeshore State Park, dock, plug the boat in, throw the TV on, put some college football on. Didn't really watch it, but we had college football on. And then, So then I'm like, you know, I need to trim my toenails. So I go to the very back part of my yacht. And then I sit there, I got my toenail clippers and I'm just ready to start hacking away at some toenails. And then I hear, hey, Nick, or I hear, hey, you should have that boat out. Anyway, and I look up and it's my friend Ed. So Ed, it was great to see you down there at Lakeshore State Park. So here we are in October. I played some golf this weekend. It seems like a gorgeous week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, beautiful days every day. Then Friday comes, and they said there was a threat of rain, but the real slim chance didn't rain on Friday. And then Saturday, it's like we're on this pattern where, like, if you'd have told me at the beginning of summer that it's going to be a drought summer with above average temperatures, I said, fucking score. That's great for boating. I mean, on inland, maybe you don't like droughts as much. The lake water levels like might drop a little bit, but But on Lake Michigan, a drought summer doesn't really affect Lake Michigan much, especially, I mean, there's so many factors that contribute to lake levels. So I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if you'd have told me drought summer above average temperatures, I'd have been like, shit, that's going to be a great boating summer. Well, I mean, it's we've had rain or threat of rain. I think six of the past eight weekends. A couple that didn't rain, but then we had like 3 weeks in a row where it rained beautiful all week and then rains on Saturday. And they weren't like all day rains, but it was like, just, I don't know, for the amount of drought we had and dry, you know, and stuff, it just, the weekends just, I don't know. It was just the weather, way the weather pattern came out here in southeastern Wisconsin. But anyway, enough of my complaining about the weather. We got in Saturday. We got out there, had to watch the radar every 20 minutes, but we got dropped the boat in about 1 o'clock, 1:30, and then cruised around, just me, my daughter, and her boyfriend. And then it was a nice day. And then pulled off around 5, left Lakeshore State Park, maybe 5:15. Got back to Skipper Bud's, maybe 6, just before 6. Pulled the boat out, pulled it in the warehouse, and started wiping it down. Got a little bit of rain then, but we were high and dry, had the boat put away. So we kind of dodged the rain, but still, it's like, man, it's nice when you have a weekend. The thing when there's rain and you're going to go boating is if it's that 30% chance of rain, you're checking the radar every 5 minutes. You get up in the morning, you're turning on the news to see, you know, it's really nice when it's like Thursday and the forecast for Saturday is like a 2% chance of rain. You don't got to check the forecast. You don't got to worry about it. You know what you're doing that weekend. You can plan. You can do your stuff. You get up on Saturday. I go to the gym. I don't have to sit there and check the forecast and update my fiance and anybody else who's coming. Hey, the weather's looking like it's a go. Weather's looking like it's a no-go. But yeah, that's what I have to do when it's this 30% chance of rain crap. Watch the radar. And then the thing is, like, I can't say the forecast was wrong this weekend, because if you looked at Kenosha, about Kenosha, maybe say Racine down to Chicago, they kind of got hammered on Saturday with a barrage. Chicago got hammered with showers all day. And then, but some of those stuck up to like Racine, Kenosha area. So when I sit here and I complain about Milwaukee television stations, and don't get me wrong, they deserve it. The weather forecast. I mean, there's days where they said, not an all-day rain, don't cancel your plans, and it rains all day and you had to cancel your plans. But there's other days where they said dry day, and then we had thunderstorms pop up. This is past summer. So anyway, but the viewing area for channel 12 or 6 or whatever for the Milwaukee TV stations, that includes Racine and Kenosha. So, you know, you're broadcasting or you're forecasting for the whole viewing area. And, you know, perhaps it's hard to pinpoint that precisely to be able to say, well, the southern half of our viewing area, I mean, sometimes they do, but the southern half of our viewing area has a 50% chance of rain. The northern half of our viewing area has a, you know, 20% chance of rain. I mean, again, sometimes they can be that specific. Sometimes they say, you know, this is mostly I-94 and south. But anyway, can't say that if the forecast was totally wrong, because if you were in Racine or Kenosha, you saw some spotty showers throughout the day. But we escaped it up here. Even though, like I said, just because you stay dry doesn't mean it was as relaxing of a day as it could have been. Because again, checking the damn radar on my phone every 30 seconds, well, every 20 minutes, I'd say I check the radar on the phone just to make sure nothing's popping. So yeah, then I go play golf today. And then I was excited to do the show today. I got a couple good topics for tonight. And then I play golf, started playing golf. I love the fall. Another reason I love the fall is because you're guaranteed the golf course is going to be empty during these stupid Packer games. So I'm like, Packers play 325. Perfect. I look and there's, you know, golf course was wide open. Although for as wide open as it was, I always end up running behind some stupid ass slow foursome. That was the case today. I get out there. There was all the tee times were open from like, you know, 1-2 o'clock on. And then sure enough, get out there and there's just enough group space just around that I couldn't really get a full nine without having to skip around and wait. And, you know, it was still fun. So started playing better towards the end of my round. Feeling the good mood, come home. New Berlin Hill is only 5 minutes away. Drive home, get ready to do the show. It's about 7 o'clock, maybe a little bit before. Back into my driveway, open the garage door. And then I have my window down. And then as I open my garage door and I'm backing in, I hear this strange noise from inside my garage. I'm like, what the fuck? Jump out of my truck looking. Well, so I got these hoses set in my garage. I've got a hose bib, a spigot in my garage. And then I have a splitter on that and then two hoses because I wash my truck. I have a four-car attached garage with a heater and a floor drain. So all winter long, I can wash and wax my truck in there. Well, I have this hose with a splitter coming out of the spigot. There's a splitter because then I have one hose that goes on the right side of the truck, the passenger side, one hose that goes on the left side, pretty much one that's on the right side of the garage, one that's on the left side of the garage, so that I don't have to drag the hose all the way around when I'm washing my vehicles. Again, used to have the boat in the garage too. Now I don't. Now it's just really my truck, my motorcycle, and you know, my bike and stuff. So these two hoses, so that when you're doing one side of the truck, you don't have to like drag the hose all the way around, get the hose stuck on the between the wheel of the truck and the garage floor. And so you spray the one side, shut that hose off. I've got a little shut off on the end of the hose. So I've got these two hoses, and then you walk to their side, pick up that hose, spray it. So you don't have to drag the hose around. And then I've got shut offs on the end of the hose, so I don't have to go back to the spigot every time and shut that off. I just shut it off at the end of the hose. I've got a little shut off valve at the end of my hose. And then a little bit of I call it leader. It's just hose that doesn't have any end on it, so that when you're rinsing off the truck, you can't bump it with like the metallic nozzle there. So it's essentially just an open-ended hose. Anyway, so I noticed a couple weeks ago, one of the hoses had a bit of a hernia. It had a bulge in it. And I started thinking, man, that would suck if that thing popped when I wasn't here. But I thought, those hoses, they're reinforced, you know, they got, so of course today I'm out there golfing, come home, the hose burst. So, and again, it's shut off, the shut off of the hose is at the end of the hose. So here in my garage, the hose is on the far side of my garage, because there's the other hose on the other side. The spigot is open because I don't shut it off at the spigot. So you got live pressurized water to the end of each hose till the shutoff valve at the end of the hose. So I can sit there with the hose in my hand and open and shut the valve and with just the last little 3 foot, you know, leader section, the 3 foot final piece, which is just a hose cut. So it's just the rubber end of the hose. So there's no metal end to scratch a vehicle or something as you're rinsing it off. So sure as shit, it burst. I got water spraying all over my garage. My garage is drywalled and it's all, you know, finished, trimmed out windows and window treatments on the windows and fucking water spraying all over my garage. But then the worst part is I've got a Dualtron Thunder electric scooter. Coolest little toy. I shouldn't say coolest toy I've ever bought, because I bought some pretty damn cool toys, but just a fun little toy. But it was like $4,000, but it's a scooter, a little electric scooter. Like you've seen these bird scooters and whatever that people drive around cities, a little electric scooter. Maybe some kids in your neighborhood have some little electric scooters that, you know, putt around at 15 miles an hour or something. But this one, this Dualtron Thunder, headlights, taillights, its top speed is 50 miles an hour. And it's made when I bought it. I mean, this is before I started cutting. So I was, at the time I weighed probably like 297. I've been, for the last year and a half, I've been cutting because I'm 46 on it. So I've been slowly lose like about a half a pound a week on average, and try not to lose any muscle and maintain my muscle mass and just cut. Again, in the bodybuilding world, you call it cutting. So I'm probably down about 40 pounds. Well, at my highest, like 2015, I weighed 307. And then, so I'm down to 260. So I'm down 47 pounds from my heaviest in 2015, and I didn't really like being 307. So I was usually around 297. So then when I started a year and a half ago, when I started cutting, I was about 297 that's kind of where I've always kind of stayed at, is 297 for the last 15 years. But so I needed a scooter that was heavy duty, because some of the smaller scooters, like the weight limit on them is like 200 pounds. Well, that ain't going to do. So that's part of the reason I got this Dualtron, was because it was weight rated for 200 and No, I think it was weight rated for 300 pounds. Pretty sure it was weight rated for 300 pounds. And I'm like, well, perfect. Maybe it was even 350. So that's why I got this one. So it was expensive. It was $4,000. Well, of course, that's in my garage and it's getting sprayed. And I know it's not waterproof. I've read that before. They say they advise against riding it in the rain because it's not waterproof. So here are my scooters. So of course, this hose blows, the hose ruptures and is spraying water all over my garage. Of course, it doesn't rupture fully enough to like just pour out the water onto the floor. It ruptures only enough to be spraying the water up in the air against one wall and just, ugh. So I'm all coming home from golfing, looking forward to doing the show. And then I got to clean up that fucking mess in the garage. And then, so the scooter, I'm hoping it's okay. It had water being sprayed over, but so it's not like it was immersed in water. And just the way the scooter is, it was kind of at the angle because you put a kickstand down, it's kind of an angle. So like the foot plate, the platform that you stand on was facing towards the water. So maybe it was kind of catching that and kind of protecting the battery, which is on the underside of that. So I don't want to turn it on because if something's wet, electronics, if they get wet, don't turn them on until they dry. I mean, you want to turn them on, see if they're working right. No, the thing to do is to leave them off till they dry and then turn them on. So I haven't tried to turn it on yet. It didn't seem, I mean, it was had water all over it, but it, you know, I'm hopeful that the thing works. Otherwise, that was a $4,000 fuck up right there. I should have, when I saw that hernia, little bulge in the hose, I should have replaced the hose right away, but lesson learned. Anyway, so that was, then I was crabby and I'm like, now, do I really want to go do the show being all crabby? Cause I kind of had a good show lined up, but here I am doing the show. So I'm just doing the show crabby, which is not unusual. I mean, I've done the show crabby before. Speaking of crabby, you know what I love? I love a sporting event where a good Buck Joe Biden chant breaks out. I'm sure you guys have heard these. This is my take on these is with the phony propaganda saturation news that we have today, we all know Joe Biden, I wouldn't bet my life, but I would bet a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money that Joe Biden lost the election big league. There's all this indicators that anyway, so we know Joe Biden isn't as popular as the election results said. We know Joe Biden isn't as popular as the news media would make him out to be, but they're just on overtime protecting this guy. You know, Joe Biden, I mean, I don't even know what makes him which of his shortcomings makes him the most unpopular. Is it, and maybe it's different things for different people. Is it the Corona bullshit? And Joe Biden, I mean, if you ever want to know how ruthless and heartless Democrats are. People are dying because of Democrats, because Democrats love coronavirus. They love the control. They only want us to get out of this quote pandemic if it's on their terms. Only on their terms do they want us out of this pandemic. And their terms are pretty much surrender all your freedoms to us forever. Now, under the guise of health departments, and pandemics, or under the guise of climate change, we can pretty much control your whole life. Do what we tell you to do. That's the end game here. But they're killing people. I mean, now in Florida, Ron DeSantis has got these Regeneron. So that's the brand name, but it's the antibody. I forget the term. They've got the antibody immunity clinics. They're essentially these antibody therapy. Regeneron is one of the brand names. See, now I feel like I should have to go. I feel like I need to Google it in order to. What is it? Give me a second here. There we go. Monoclonal. That's what it is. The monoclonal antibody treatment. Regeneron is one of them, but this monoclonal antibodies are antibodies that fight the coronavirus, and they're pretty successful. It's a pretty successful treatment. It's one of the treatments that at least is, I believe, FDA approved. So it's one of the few treatments because they shun hydroxychloroquine, they shun ivermectin for use against coronavirus. But Ron DeSantis has these monoclonal antibody treatment clinics set up all around Florida. And you test positive, you go to them, and early treatment is the best. And they've like significantly reduced their hospitalizations. And, you know, a month or something ago, they're like, oh, Florida's surging. And lo and behold, they do that. And then they've really cut their hospitalizations and all sorts of stuff. Well, then Joe Biden, when they've got all these monoclonal antibody clinics set up all around the state that people can go to as soon as they're diagnosed, because early treatment is the best treatment for COVID. Now Joe Biden, there's his administration, they're rationing the Regeneron. There's plenty of Regeneron to go around, but Joe Biden, under the guise of, well, we can't let Florida have it all, they're saying that they're not sending Florida as much of the Regeneron as Florida could use at their clinics. And they're saying, well, it's not right that Florida gets it all, but there's plenty to go around. And that's what was Ron DeSantis was saying in that news today. But, you know, the media is just doing everything. So when I say that Joe Biden and his administration, like, they're killing people, they're literally killing people. They're literally doing things to that results in people dying. I mean, I still believe that my dad would be alive if it wasn't for the fact that he lived in Illinois, and they won't, you know, they won't treat anybody with ivermectin. He was 5 days into his, when he was diagnosed, sends an email around to the family, you know, tested positive for COVID, mostly mild symptoms so far. And he was 5 days in. I mean, it's not like he, you know, felt sick one day and the next day he was in the hospital. He was doing good he was doing fine for 5 days. I believe if he'd have got on hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, right in that early stage, I think my dad would be alive today. But that's neither here nor there. But Joe Biden and his administration, they're literally killing people. They are literally killing people by rationing out the Regeneron, not giving Florida as much as they want, in addition to all the other steps that they're taking to suppress these therapies that there's no downside. There's no downside to letting people try ivermectin. There's no downside to letting people try hydroxychloroquine. These are drugs that have been around for decades, very effective drugs with little to no side effects. But that tells you what you need to know about Democrats. They're literally willing to kill people for their political ends. They are not compassionate. They are not. I don't know what different way to say it. They're evil people. They're evil power hungry people. Don't get me wrong. I believe there's evil power hungry Republicans as well. But Democrats as a party, the elected Democrats, because I think a lot of your Democrat voters, they're just really, really dumb, uninformed lemmings. Emotion driven, feeling driven, not logic driven lemmings. But your elected Democrats, I mean, these are disgusting, power hungry people. But yet on the news, you don't hear any. I mean, there's so many reasons to criticize Joe Biden, criticize him for his poor handling of coronavirus, criticize him for his absolutely atrocious handling at the border, criticize him for the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, criticize him for, I mean, the guy hasn't done anything right. And he can't even complete a sentence. But then you go to these, but the news media is so interested in the propaganda. You know, the late night talk hosts, they're not going to sit there and bash Joe Biden. The anchors on CNN, NBC, MSNBC, they're not going to bash Joe Biden. Fox News is, even though they're, you know, have, you know, I don't trust Fox News as far as I can kick them. Really, the only network I really trust is One America News. I mean, that's my favorite news network. Newsmax has kind of caved on some stuff. They don't have the balls that One America News does, but Newsmax is okay. But I watch a lot of One America News. That's my go-to. But so many reasons to be disgusted with Joe Biden. The economy is in shambles. Foreign policy is in shambles. Immigration is in shambles. Coronavirus strategy is in shambles. But yet the media keeps candy coating and fluffing this senile diaper-wearing bedwetter, Joe Biden, and they run and cover for him. There's no way for people to express their displeasure because the news media isn't going to cover it. The news media isn't going to cover, you know, Donald Trump can have 100,000 people in a football stadium at a rally. The media doesn't cover that. 600 pro-abortion activists show up in D.C. and they cover that. I mean, the media is just running massive cover for Joe Biden. So you've got these, but what they can't do is you've got these live sports broadcasts. And at college football stadiums, you've probably heard these, the fuck Joe Biden chants start coming out. When I saw the first videos of some of these, you know, a month or so ago, you couldn't really tell, is it stadium wide or is it just one section of the stadium? You could hear it clearly. There's, you know, dozens of people for sure chanting, maybe hundreds of people chanting, but you really couldn't tell if it was like the whole stadium. But some of the ones I've seen recently, but these are breaking out all over the place. Like now it's not just a couple college football games. It's like all over the place. These fuck Joe Biden chants come up. And some of these that I've seen on various clips on just from the internet, Googling and stuff, some of them, it's a pretty widespread. Again, you can't say the whole stadium because it's just someone shooting on their cell phone. They don't have, you know, but it's definitely, you know, a huge portion of a significant portion. Maybe it's, you know, 10-15%, and it could be more, and you just can't really make it out because you're in someone's hand. You know, it's not like with television cameras, they've got microphones set up to kind of capture the whole audience sound. So these are all coming from people's individual cell phone cameras, and that's just mostly going to pick up what's in their section. It's hard to pick up the whole stadium and get a perspective of how, what percentage, is it half the people in the stadium are chanting it? Is it 25%? Is it just a, you know, 25% section of the stadium? But you can just tell now that it's these chants are growing and more audible. And I said to a friend of mine a couple of days ago, I said, you watch when those things start making the live broadcast, because right now it's just people's own cell phone video that they put on social media or YouTube. When those chants start making the live broadcast, they will dub them over. They will dub crowd noise over them. But then the thing is, see, people are so frustrated and so, and this is something that I've shared with, I talk about like my Trump flag and how people, an old lady comes up my driveway, 70-year-old lady comes up my driveway, rings my doorbell at 7:30 at night, 8 o'clock at night, just to tell me she likes my Trump flag. I mean, that's, people are so, there's so much pent up frustration and people have no outlet. There's no outlet in the news. The news media isn't covering this massive dissatisfaction and buyer's remorse among the electorate, the Democrat electorate. But these chants are another way for people to express their frustration in a public forum because there's so little way. I mean, there's only so much you can say on social media without getting censored or deplatformed. I mean, it just, these live sporting events are another outlet for people to let their voice be heard. Meanwhile, now they're breaking out at NASCAR races. I don't know if you saw this one. There was a NASCAR race, and I forgot the name of the guy that won it, but during his post-race interview, you can hear people in the crowd chanting, fuck Joe Biden. Well, of course, the reporter who's interviewing says, I don't know the name of the guy, the NASCAR guy, but his name was Brandon something. And so the reporter who's interviewing him while they're saying, fuck Joe Biden, the reporter says, "Z, they're cheering for you. They're saying, way to go, Brandon. Now, fuck Joe Biden and way to go, Brandon." I mean, maybe if you were dumb, blonde, and really drunk, you might confuse those two. This reporter knew exactly what they were saying. She was just trying. And I don't know if she's just trying to cover it because, you know, it's a live broadcast and fuck is one of the words that the FCC will pull your license for. So, but these fuck Joe Biden chants, they're more and more prevalent, more and more participatory, more and more widespread. And I think it's going to continue because there's no, people are pissed. This is not what, even the, this certainly isn't what the majority of the country voted for. And when I say majority of the country, because again, I don't believe Joe Biden won that election. But even if you take the people that voted for Joe Biden, this isn't what they voted for. Sure, it's what, you know, your Democrat elite, power hungry, you know, loyalists, it's what they voted for, but it's not what your average dumb, uninformed Democrat voter who just votes Democrat. Maybe it's some union guy or just we vote Democrat. The Democrats are the party of the little guy. But yeah, I love seeing these F Joe Biden chants going around. And it's interesting to see the lengths that the media will go through to suppress the anti Joe Biden sentiment out there in the country and to squash that and suffocate it. And I mean, we're in it. And it still boggles the mind that it just took 2 years, less than 2 years. I mean, we're a year and a half into, it'll be 2 years in November. Cause this stuff really started hardcore when Biden stole the election. That's when all this stuff really started hardcore. So we're almost 2 years in to the post-constitutional America. It's amazing to see how far the country has fallen into, you know, Orwellian realities in just 2 years. And again, it happened in a year. It happened in 6 months. I mean, and it took going back to it really started during Trump's term with all the lockdowns and stuff, which wasn't necessarily Trump's fault. That was the governors doing it. But yeah, we took a 50-year leap forward. I mean, you always figured we were going to end up in this kind of situation someday anyway, but you thought it might be 50 years down the road that we'd be falling this far into totalitarianism and tyranny. But yeah, we took a 50-year leap in 15 months, a 50-year leap forward in terms of the slide to tyranny, to communism. And it happened in 15 months, things that you thought would take 50 years. But next thing I was going to talk about, I've been calling this universal reciprocity. I think I talked about this in the show a few weeks ago. There's a bill introduced. There's a Senate bill 516. There's an assembly bill. I think the assembly bill is like 518 or 54. But these are the bills. And they do use the term reciprocity in the bill. The bill text itself, they use that term reciprocity. I instantly started calling it universal reciprocity. But I really think that I credit someone on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook, but every once in a while I read I'm sitting with my fiance at her house watching a TV show together, which is the only time I sit down and watch TV is just I sit down with my fiance on Friday nights and we watch a couple of our favorite shows. And sometimes she'll say, oh, you should see what they're saying on. So I'll look at maybe a post or two on the Wisconsin Carry fascist book group. And when I had her post something about the universal reciprocity bill, and then I called it that, and then someone pointed out, I forget who it was, but they were correct in saying it, you know, don't call it universal reciprocity. Reciprocity means reciprocal. And just because we're allowing other people to carry in our state, universal reciprocity would mean that we can carry in theirs, and that's not the case. And that's actually true. So I shouldn't call this universal reciprocity. And I'm like, well, why did I start calling? Because I should know better. The reason being is in the bill itself, they use the term reciprocity. Now, again, that's not accurate. The people that wrote the bill and they're using the term, or the Legislative Reference Bureau that's using the term reciprocity in the bill text, you know, in the LRB analysis of the bill, that's not accurate. So I don't know. It's universal acceptance. It's universal recognition, the universal concealed carry license recognition. This bill, Senate Bill 516, which I think Dewey Strobel is pushing, this bill is going to give universal recognition to out-of-state permits. Right now, only the Department of Justice decides what states we're going to honor their permit and what states we won't. It's not even reciprocity necessarily now. It's not like if we honor Minnesota, Minnesota honors us. I don't know the list offhand, but I'm sure there are states that we honor their permit here, but they don't honor our permit there. So, So reciprocity isn't the right term. There's all kinds of, right now, the Department of Justice, so essentially, you know, Josh Call decides what states Wisconsin honors their permit here in Wisconsin. Now, of course, asterisk, according to the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, according to, there's a letter from the ATF that says that you are not exempt from the gun-free school zone statute unless you are licensed to carry by the state you are, by the state you're in. So when you're in Wisconsin carrying with a Florida permit or carrying with a Minnesota permit or whatever permits are honored in Wisconsin from other states, you are not exempt from gun-free school zones, which are virtually everywhere. And it's true that local police don't enforce federal statutes. But in Wisconsin, we have our own gun-free school zone statute, which exempts concealed carry license holders from the school zones. But the federal gun-free school zone statute only exempts people who have a license from the state that the school is in. So if you're in Wisconsin, the only way to be exempt from the federal gun-free school zone statute in Wisconsin school zones is to have a Wisconsin permit, a permit issued by Wisconsin. Never seen it challenged, never seen it played out in court, but what's the cases that it would? Well, get yourself a George Zimmerman case here in Wisconsin. George Zimmerman, they tried everything they could to throw the book at that guy. He was found not guilty by a jury down there. The feds looked into it, trying to find federal charges to bring him up on. Believe you me, if George Zimmerman had been, and I'm trying to remember the kid, trying to remember the name of the kid that he was involved in the altercation with. It's going to take me a sec. Maybe it won't come to me. Gosh, that's how quick time flies. Maybe Lon's here in the chat. Maybe Lon will get it for me. But George Zimmerman and can't remember the name of the kid. Anyway, it's not even on the tip of my tongue. So George, Trayvon Martin, that's it, Trayvon Martin. So George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, if George Zimmerman had been in Georgia carrying with a Florida permit let's say that attack happened on within a school zone or something, believe you me, they would have brought George Zimmerman up on charges for violating the gun-free school zone statute. Again, if he had even though I don't know if it does, but let's assume that Georgia honors the Florida permit. If George Zimmerman had been involved in an altercation in Georgia where he shot someone in self-defense, but he happened to be inside of a school zone, you are not being private property or someplace otherwise exempt from school zones. But believe you me, he would have been brought up on charges for violating the gun-free school zone. So that's the one. You know, are you going to, if you get pulled over for speeding in Wisconsin, is a Wisconsin police officer going to, if you're carrying with a Florida permit, is this police officer going to say, well, you know, you're not exempt from the school zone statute? No, because Wisconsin police don't enforce federal statutes. But if you ever ended up using your gun in self-defense, and when I say using it in self-defense, having to fire it, because you can use your gun in self-defense and not have to fire it. 90%+ of the time, there's FBI statistics to say defensive use of a gun. Someone threatens you, you pull your gun, they run away, you end up not filing a report, you don't even call the police. So those are those defensive uses of guns, some of which go unreported. But of the ones that are reported, 90% of the time a gun is presented in self-defense, it's not fired. So someone goes to rob a convenience store, clerk pulls a gun, and the perpetrator runs away. They'd still call the police, file a report. That's a defensive use of a gun, and the gun isn't fired, even though it's a defensive use of a gun. By those statistics, over 90% of the time, guns that are pulled in self-defense aren't fired. So somewhere less than 10% of the time a gun is pulled into self-defense, it is fired. But certainly then, if you take all of the defensive uses of a gun that aren't reported, that's got to push, which we think there might be millions of, so 2.2 million a year is a theoretical model that they speculate. Because how do you document an unreported case? You can't. But we know there are. We know there's cases where people use their gun in self-defense and end up not reporting it to the police. With all that in mind, if you end up using your gun in self-defense and firing it in self-defense, pray it's not against a person who's black or another one of these special classes of people that draws the media attention, because that's where, if they're looking for something to nail you on, you're carrying with an out-of-state permit in a state, and you end up in a school zone, that's where I see them nailing you. But so again, I can't call this bill universal reciprocity, but I talked to a couple legislative or a couple of staffers today, this last week, because this, this bill, Senate Bill 516, it got a public hearing. I didn't hear about the public hearing till Wednesday. The public hearing turned out to be, till on Tuesday, the public hearing turned out to be on Wednesday. So I had to, do some quick announcements about it for anybody that wanted to attend the hearing. But I was trying to handicap or not whether this bill, what's the strategy? What's the roadmap for this bill? So I called, did I call Coolidge's office? I'm trying to remember who I called first. No, I called someone in the assembly who was listed as who I thought was the primary author. Did I write it down here? I guess I didn't. Oh, Gundrum. I called Gundrum's office and talked to someone there. Then I called Dewey. They said that Dewey Strobel was really the lead. So I talked to Dewey. I wrote these notes down. I talked to someone in Dewey Strobel's office as well. Couldn't really get them to share with me what their strategy was. I mean, they just kind of were playing dumb, like, well, we're going to try to get our goal right now is to get the bill, passed in the Senate and the Assembly and then see what happens. So I couldn't get an answer, like, If this is just political folly, if they just want to put it on Evers' desk so he vetoes it and they can say, oh, look, Evers, you know, or if there's really a roadmap, because I thought perhaps if Evers won't sign it, I just I'm trying to handicap whether Evers would sign it or not. I'm not sure it's a for sure no from Evers. I mean, if he wants to be a total draconian anti-gun zealot, he'd veto it. And I can already see his talking points from Tony Evers. You know, we don't want states. Basically what this bill would do, again, it's not universal reciprocity, but it takes the decision-making process out of the hands of the Department of Justice and pretty much says, if you have a valid concealed carry license from another state, it's honored in Wisconsin. So it's universal recognition of out-of-state permits. So would Tony Evers sign it? I can see his talking points. You know, we don't want states that make it easy to – some states don't even require a background – I think they all require a background check. He's like, some states don't even require mandatory training to get a concealed carry license. We don't want those states to be able to have a, carry here in Wisconsin. So I can see the talking points for Evers. And I can also see the Democrat mindset that they'd rather have the DOJ be in charge of reciprocity because, and what permits get honored, because that maintains control in the government. So it seems like there's more reasons that Governor Skeletor, Governor Evers, is going to veto this bill. Should this bill pass the Senate? Should it pass the Assembly? Seems like there's more reasons that Evers is going to veto it. And I can't really think of many reasons that he would sign it. Now, it's true that a lot of Democrats carry. It's also true that lots of Democrat-leaning voters in the inner city carry and come from other states. But elected Democrats have shown that they don't give a shit about their constituent safety for decades. So I can't see them being – I can't see the inner city concealed carrying Democrat-leaning voters being a motivation for Tony Evers to sign this bill. So then I wondered, is the thought process here for moving this bill forward, are they trying to get maybe a veto-proof majority willing to support the bill? Maybe you've got some Democrats from outside of Dane County and outside of Milwaukee County willing to support it, like your La Crosse area Democrats in Milwaukee. I think there's some Democrats up in the northwestern part of the state, like your Hayward or Duluth is in Minnesota, but your Hayward areas. I think there's a couple pockets of places up there. I think there's some Indian reservations where there's some Democrat representation. So those are some Democrats, and it wouldn't take too many because we've got such a large Republican majority in the Assembly and such a large Republican majority in the Senate, that it wouldn't take too many Democrats flipping to override a veto from Governor Skeletor. So maybe I asked Representative Gundrum's office, the staffer, And I asked the staffer at Senator Strobel's office, I asked them both if that was the play here, if they were trying to go for like a veto-proof majority. And they wouldn't say that to me. They just kind of played the standard line. Well, we really just want to, right now, we just want to get it through the assembly. We want to get it, you know, get a good showing at the hearing. And so, you know, I wasn't sure how to read that. Wasn't sure if they don't want to admit that the bill doesn't have a chance of passing and they're just trying to play politics with it. I don't know if they don't want to admit that their strategy is to try to get a veto-proof majority. And then they don't want to tip off, you know, Evers that to start trying to circle the wagons. Maybe, I don't know if there's any Milwaukee or Dane County assembly reps or state senators who are going to support it. Would Lena Taylor? Maybe. She supported concealed carry, Act 35. But maybe some outstate Democrats, just enough to, I think there's some Democrats in the assembly from the Janesville area, perhaps, just enough for them to support. And assuming that the Democrat Party in Wisconsin isn't going to go full Jim Doyle to prevent it from passing and do the Gary Sherman arm twist. I don't know if you guys remember that one. When I was thinking about this topic earlier in the week, I thought, you know, there might be some people who don't remember or weren't in the movement at the time. But I was going to take you on a little walk down memory lane here. Some of you may know, some of you may not. Wisconsin was razor close to getting concealed carry all the way back in 2002 and 2003. And I think they came pretty close in 2005 to getting concealed carry as well. But for those of you who don't recall, when I first got involved in the concealed carry movement in Wisconsin was back in 2002. Dick Baker had an organization called the United States, excuse me, Dick Baker had an organization, headed up an organization called the Wisconsin Concealed Carry Association, WCCA. And he would have a booth out at the gun show out in Waukesha. So I volunteered to work the booth, and they were having people sign postcards to send in to their state representatives asking them to vote in favor of, I think in 2002, that was the first time that the Personal Protection Act, which is what they called it at the time, made it out of committee. It passed committee and went to the assembly. I believe it went to the assembly, and then the assembly passed it. And that was big news because the concealed carry bill had never made it out of committee. And then here it makes it out of committee and then passes again. I think it was the assembly, or maybe it was the Senate. It passed one of the houses. This is back in 2002. And if I recall at the time, I think Scott McCallum was governor because he was, yes, Scott McCallum was governor. He was serving out the remainder of Tommy Thompson's term because Tommy Thompson got picked to be the George Bush's HH Health and Human Services Secretary. So Tommy Thompson goes out to D.C. Scott McCallum is governor. Wisconsin was at the time, because way back in 2002, Wisconsin was like one of only like six states that didn't have concealed carry. And then eventually Wisconsin was one of only two states that didn't have some form of concealed carry, even though, again, some of those states, their concealed carry was a May issue. But Wisconsin had no concealed carry, not even May issue. So the Personal Protection Act makes it out of committee in 2002, gets passed by one of the chambers, and I think it was the assembly. So I'm working this trade show booth at Dick Baker's trade show for the Wisconsin Concealed Carry Association back in 2002. And then, I'm pretty sure that it was the Senate. So for those of you that might recall, or maybe you don't, if you were, you know, weren't in the movement or were too young at the time, Dave Zien was the senator who was sponsoring the bill. The bill passed the assembly. Now it's coming back to me. It passed the assembly, and that was in the Senate. And at the time, the Senate was a majority controlled by Democrats. The Senate Majority Leader was Chuck Quala from Madison. And they were going to – Senator Dave Zien had told supporters – that the bill was going to pass. They had enough votes. Democrats controlled the Senate, but they had enough votes to pass it. They had the votes they needed to pass it. And they kept saying Senator Zien tried to call the bill for a vote, And then the Democrats cited a procedural claim that something to do with like dress code in the assembly, and then made a motion to adjourn. They gaveled the session shut, and Dave Zien's bill never got a vote. People were so spitting mad. There was people in the gallery of the Wisconsin Senate that were so spitting mad because, again, this was 2002. We thought we were going to get concealed carry because if it had the votes to pass in the Senate, and Governor McCallum would have signed it. But the Democrats gaveled this. Someone cited it was a parliamentary trick. They said, here was the quote from Scott Gunderson at the time, who was in the senator, or who's a representative, talking about the state Senate. He said, quite honestly, I can't believe the procedural claim tactics that the Senate Democrats resorted to in order to prevent a vote in this important piece of legislation. So that's where the Democrats, at the time, Wisconsin was one of only six states that did not have a concealed carry law. This is, again, 2002. But the Democrats cite this, someone makes a motion for rule something, and the Democrats took a voice vote, and they said aye. They gaveled the session shut, and then Senator Zien's bill never got a vote. It was blocked by that parliamentary procedure. So it was just, and they kept saying to him, hey, we're going to take up your bill at the end of the session. Dave, we're going to take up your bill at the end of the session, because this was the last day of the session for the Senate back in 2002. So everybody was super pissed off. Anyway, the next year they went to try again, and the bill was really, really close. I think the next year the bill passed the assembly, passed the Senate, but Jim Doyle was then governor, because this is 2003. So Jim Doyle is then governor, and Jim Doyle vetoes it. So then the bill had already passed the Senate and the assembly with veto-proof majorities. Now, in some states, if a bill passes the Senate and the assembly, if it passes both chambers of their bicameral legislature with veto-proof majorities, it doesn't even go to the governor. It just becomes law. But in Wisconsin, even though it had veto-proof majorities when it passed the first time, passed the Senate and passed the assembly, Governor Doyle vetoed it. In Wisconsin, you have to come back and take another vote. Well, you would think that it would pass because if everybody that voted for it the first time votes for it again, it's going to pass with veto-proof majorities. But in Wisconsin, there is the formality that you have to take the veto override vote. Went to the assembly overrode Jim Doyle's veto, went to the Senate, or was it the other way around? Anyway, it was Representative Gary Sherman. Hey, we've only got 90 seconds left in the live broadcast here. So Scott and Lon, thank you guys for tuning into the live show. I'm going to finish this one up on the podcast. If anybody wants to catch the remainder of this topic, it'll be on the podcast. All of you who listen to the podcast, which is the majority of you, this will be seamless for you. But so when it went to, again, I think it was the Senate, but Gary Sherman was, well, now I'm going to have to go look, because Gary Sherman was the turncoat who changed his vote. Oh, Gary Sherman served in the Wisconsin Assembly. Okay, that's what it was. So the Personal Protection Act in 2003 passed the Senate with a veto. The Senate overrode the veto, and then it went to the Assembly. And all that had to happen in the Assembly was the same people who voted for it the first time voted for it again. So Gary Sherman voted for the Personal Protection Act the first time it passed, but on the veto override vote, Gary Sherman switched his vote, and the bill failed by one vote and didn't pass because Gary Sherman. So the rule, the thinking was that Gary Sherman was offered a judgeship. Jim Doyle offered a judgeship, so he became a judge and was appointed to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals eventually. So anyway, that was the Gary Sherman arm twist. The Gary Sherman payoff is that he was appointed to a judgeship because I believe his constituents were going to be mad enough that he switched his vote for the Personal Protection Act for concealed carry. But that was his payoff. That was Gary Sherman's payoff for Jim Doyle for doing Jim Doyle's bidding and switching his vote to vote against the Personal Protection Act after he had voted for it the first time around. So that was a little bit of a walk down memory lane for some of you who maybe weren't in the movement at the time or maybe were too young to pay attention of how close Wisconsin was. We were one parliamentary trick from getting concealed carry back in 2002. And then we were one flip-flopper short from getting concealed carry in 2003. But that's just when we talk about veto overrides and gun bills in Wisconsin, that's just a little bit of a walk down memory lane there. Back to this universal recognition of out-of-state permits. When I say to people, because look, if you live in Wisconsin, you might say, well, what's in it for me? Why should I spend my time worrying about Senate Bill 516, worrying about universal recognition? I live in Wisconsin. I don't care. If you live in Wisconsin and you have a Wisconsin concealed carry license, you got to think about the domino effect. You got to think about lots of states tend to pass legislation that other states pass. So if Wisconsin passes this universal concealed carry recognition for other states, that means that people from Minnesota, people from wherever, they can legally carry in Wisconsin, and that's a good thing. It would also give the Republicans in neighboring states, again, Illinois is probably a lost cause, but it would give Republicans perhaps in Minnesota, Republicans in Michigan, places that Wisconsin might not have, that Wisconsin concealed carry permits aren't currently honored, it might give them the motivation to pass similar legislation, because there's a definite pattern. There's like the ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. There's places where politicians, elected officials go to share legislation from their states with people in other states that they might want to pass in their state, legislation that worked well, you know, legislation that accomplished some platform issue. So it's, again, something that I think even if you live in Wisconsin and you say, why should I care? I think it is something that you should care about. Next thing I was going to talk about was a disappointing ruling out of Washington County. Wisconsin carry, there's a couple called, their last name is Lafferty, and I forget their first names, but they are foster parents, and in Washington County, is a very conservative area. And in Washington County, in order to be a foster parent, you have to agree to not possess or have firearms unless they're, I believe they have to be in the home locked up. So if they're in the home in a safe, you can have them. I presume you can take them out for hunting, but you can't carry and be a foster parent. So if you're a foster parent, you're not, regardless of whether you have a concealed carry license or not, in Washington County, they will not let you be a foster parent unless you keep your guns stored, guns and ammunition, both stored and locked. If a gun is on your hip, it's not stored and locked. And so Washington County prohibits that for foster parents. Wisconsin carry funded the lawsuit on behalf of the Lafferty's. This was filed in circuit court in Washington County. And unfortunately, the ruling was issued last week, and the judge ruled against the foster parents. Our attorney said that he didn't have a lot of time to digest it yet, but he basically said that in the judge's ruling, essentially the foster parents voluntarily waived their Second Amendment rights by when they agreed to be foster parents. So by choosing to be a foster parent, you're voluntarily surrendering your Second Amendment rights. I don't agree with it. Our attorneys are going to continue to digest the decision, and then they're going to let us know whether an appeal, they think an appeal is warranted, whether they think we could win an appeal, what grounds we would appeal on, so on and so forth. So disappointing ruling coming out from the Washington County Circuit Court this past week. Last thing I want to talk about today was the Wisconsin Economic Development Commission. Last week I mentioned how big government establishment Republicans love to give away money to, just like Democrats. They just do it through money to corporations. Democrats like to dole out your tax dollars through entitlements. They give them to various welfare programs, food share, rent share, you know, Obama phones. I mean, all kinds of different Republicans, big government Republicans, they love to give away money, taxpayer money, just the same way. But their conduit is through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which is not a corporation at all. It's a bureaucracy, government bureaucracy, but they essentially dole out tax credits to companies, and it's usually under the guise of job creation. I talked about this before in the show, how this is crushing small business in Wisconsin. This is just the most recent example. I've given other ones in the past, but it's honestly, it's probably been a year since I've talked about this kind of thing on the show. But the Wisconsin Economic Development Commission announces $9 million support of Generac's 700 job expansion in Wisconsin. This is, I'm reading from the Business Journal where I read this past week. Margaret Nazek is the reporter. Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation said it will award an additional $9 million in enterprise zone tax credits to Waukesha-based Generac Holdings if the company completes its goal of another $53 million investment in facilities across Wisconsin and the creation of more than 700 jobs by 2024. The company made an announcement as well as performed a ceremonial ribbon cutting at its new Pewaukee facility Tuesday. If you drive down 94 in Pewaukee, Waukesha, there used to be on the north side of 94, there was a building. It was an American Family Insurance building, kind of a, it looks like a stone facade. I don't know if it's actually stone, it might be ephes, but it looks to be like a masonry facade of the building, kind of a recently constructed building. I don't know how old the building is, but it's less than 20 years old, probably less than 15 years old, maybe less than 10 years old. It's so north side of the freeway used to have a little red sign, red backlit sign, American Family Insurance. Well, American Family moved their people out of that building, and that building was sold recently to Generac. So this is kind of, I don't know if it's right across from the airport, the Waukesha Kreitz Field, but it's kind of close to there. Again, north side of the freeway. I'm trying to think of what, I don't know if that's J. It might be County Road J that, but anyway, it overlooks Interstate 94 on the north side of the road. So Generac bought that building, and they're going to supposedly have 700 people that they're going to hire, some of which will be in that building. So if you do the math, 700 jobs, $9 million tax credit, it comes to $13,000 per job. I'm going from memory here, but sometimes these tax credits, I mean, I remember Foxconn, I did the math, the total number of jobs Foxconn was supposed to create divided by the amount of tax credits, and I think that one came to like $53,000 per job. But I've every time I see these Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation issuing these tax credits, I just do the math. How many jobs are they supposed to create in order to get the tax credit, and then divide it by the tax credit? And it's usually between 13,000 and $33,000 per job created. But I have a question. Why the fuck are we paying to create jobs when there are bajillions of jobs open in Wisconsin that we can't fill? It's not like there's so many people out there looking for work in Wisconsin that we need to create jobs for them. We already have jobs that we can't fill, but yet we're going to give Generac $13,000 per job for every job they create. This I've shared this before, but it's been a while, so I'm going to share it again. This is how small businesses get screwed. See, if you're Generac, you can go because politicians are going to love the ribbon cutting ceremony and but this is how they do the payoff to big business. This is how your legislators can curry favor and bestow millions of dollars to their supporters in the business community, big business, not small business, big business, because small business, you don't hit the radar. If it's not worth a press release and a photo op and a press conference, they don't care. But again, here's how it screws small businesses. For every engineer or salesperson or HR person, for every person that Generac hires, they're essentially getting $13,000 tax credit. Now, this is per job. This isn't for every job, for every blue collar job, every white collar, every job. So if they hire a janitor and pay him $30,000 a year, they get a $13,000 tax credit for that if he's full time. For a let's take a $50,000 a year starting wage position. Generac knows that if they hire someone, they're going to get $13,000 in tax credits from the state of Wisconsin. Generac goes to the same career fairs as thousands of other small companies here in Wisconsin. Generac recruits the same workers as thousands of other small companies. Generac hires the same janitors. Generac hires the same office staff, the same receptionist, the same HR specialist, the same salespeople. Generac goes after the same kind of workers that thousands and thousands of other companies, including very small companies here in Wisconsin, are going after as well. But because Generac is a big business and they can get favors bestowed, they're big enough to attract the favoritism of elected officials in the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Generac gets $13,000 per job for every person they hire. Do you think that might be a leg up in the hiring process? Generac wants to hire someone. Maybe the going rate for that wage, maybe it's an entry-level IT person. I don't know what the entry-level IT person makes, but let's say, I'll take it back. Entry-level salesperson. Entry-level salesperson, average salary for entry-level salesperson, $40,000. Maybe $40,000 plus there's a bonus compensation plan for hitting your targets. Maybe there's commission or something, but let's say $40,000 is their base salary. That's the going rate. That's the fair market value for an entry-level salesperson. Entry-level salespeople know this. They're getting recruited. They're graduating from Whitewater. They're graduating from wherever, and they're going out there and they're seeing the job offerings out there. And the starting pay is $40,000 for entry-level salespeople. Entry-level business-to-business, entry-level inside salespeople, let's just say. So Generac knows that the average starting pay is about $40,000, but Generac also knows that for everyone they hire, they get a $13,000 tax credit. So that $40,000 salary person isn't going to cost them $40,000 because they're going to get a $13,000 tax credit. So it's really only going to cost them $27,000. Now, obviously, it costs them different because you pay your FICA, you pay benefits, but everybody else pays that too. I hire someone, I've got to pay them FICA. But their compensation, $40,000 to Generac, nope, it's actually not going to cost them $40,000 because they hire that person. They're going to get a $13,000 tax credit. So the net cost of that person they're hiring is only $27,000. But here's me or any other small business who isn't big enough to suck up to politicians and get these tax credits. If I went to Representative Sanfilippo or Senator Coyanga and said, hey, I want to hire two people. Can I get a tax credit from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation if I hire two people? I mean, Generac gets $13,000 a job, so I'll take $26,000 tax credit. Can I get a $26,000 tax credit for hiring two people? They're going to say Nick Poundsand. So if I'm trying to hire, so I go to a career fair, the same career fair Generac goes to, or I advertise in the same job boards that Generac advertises on. Generac's going to pay him $40,000 a year. I'm going to pay him $40,000 a year. But Generac knows they get $13,000 tax credit. So Generac says, you know what? We're going to pay them $45,000 a year. We're still coming out ahead, but now we can afford to offer them over market value because we're getting tax credits. So we're actually going to end up with under market value for our net cost. That's how small businesses get screwed by the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Because these big companies that get there, and it sounds great, oh, we didn't just give them a $9 million tax credit. They had to create jobs for that. Well, bullshit. We don't need to pay to create jobs in Wisconsin when everybody is hiring. When we don't have enough workers to fill the jobs we have, but yet here we're going to pay, WEDC is going to pay Generac $13,000 per job, $9 million total, to create these 700 jobs within 3 years. All that's doing is giving corporate welfare to big companies, screwing small businesses, driving up the cost of wages. And again, it's all coming from government handouts. Taxpayer, that's taxpayer money. This $9 million of tax credits that goes to Generac, Wisconsin's budget doesn't go down. I mean, Wisconsin still has the same bills. That $9 million of taxes that Generac would have had to pay has to be paid by someone else. Has to be paid by all the rest of the companies. They have to pay more in taxes because Generac got a $9 million tax credit. Wisconsin doesn't get the $9 million they would have got from Generac's taxes, paying taxes. But Wisconsin isn't spending less money. Wisconsin isn't reducing its expenditures by $9 million so they can give Generac a $9 million tax credit. Wisconsin's still spending all the same amount of money. So they have to increase taxes. They have to bring in more tax revenue elsewhere that they didn't get from Generac. So everybody else's taxes goes up. And they screw small businesses. And that's the way it goes. And Scott Walker was all proud of WEDC. And it's funny because I think it was Tony Evers. He was railing against, he was saying how he was going to disband the WEDC. And then as soon as he gets elected, oh, no, 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 he changes his mind. Because they know. Because the Democrats know that that's how you pay off. That's how you get big business. You want to know how they get big business to fall in line and do what they want? You want to know how they get big businesses to go woke? Stuff like this. You would think that big businesses, A, they're big, they're private. They can tell the government to pound sand when that comes to these voluntary things like vaccine mandates and stuff like that. Nope. You got to stay in the favor of the bigwigs. You got to stay in the favor of the ruling class if you want to get tax credits like this. It's just bullshit. I mean, this country is so, I don't know, it's hard. There's days it's hard to find hope, and then there's days where you see glimmers of hope, and I don't know. Depends on the day of how optimistic or pessimistic I tend to feel about the future for this country. Anyway, so that's the show for today. Thank you for Lon and Scott for tuning in live, and to all my podcast listeners. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully, Tom from Lake Geneva said he had sent me an email, asked me if I was going to do a show tonight, and I didn't get back to him until like 3 minutes before the show or 5 minutes before the show. So, Tom, hopefully you were able to catch the show or catch the podcast. Otherwise, hope you guys all had a great week. We'll see what happens next week. Maybe we have a show. Maybe we don't. Maybe if there's a lot of stuff going on throughout the week that I feel like talking about and I got a different perspective, we'll do a show. If I don't have a lot of topics, maybe it'll be 2 weeks. But I'll either talk to you next week for sure. I never go more than 1 week off. So if I don't talk to you guys next week, which I might, maybe see you next Sunday, but if not, the Sunday afterwards. You guys have a great week. Carry on and be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.